produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, artists, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, stash.normal.org. And continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. Visit www.redaphid.com. It's Monday, March 24th, and it's 4:20 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. We hope you enjoyed last weekend's music stash. In case you missed it, Cannabis Carrie is putting together the last 10 songs from our daily shows and combining them into one weekend podcast for your partying pleasure. Tune in on the weekends and get your ganja groove on. And it's spring break here at the Daily Audio Stash, and we want to give a shout-out to all of the college students who will be enjoying some well-deserved rest from their studies by partying on the beaches of Florida, Texas, California, Arizona, Cancun, Mazatlan, and anywhere else your road trips might take you. As usual on Monday here at the Stash, we've got our Reformers calendar right after the news. Then, we speak with Papa Normal himself, Keith Strop, the founder and legal director of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Keith tells us about his court case in Massachusetts, where he and High Times editor Rick Cusick are facing charges of smoking a joint at last year's Boston Freedom Rally. Our DJ Podsafe, Cannabis Carrie, brings us a great tune for Blues Monday entitled Prozac Blues by Ernie Southern, a Vietnam vet who plays a mean slide guitar. Then we're speaking with M.L. Mathry on a very important event coming up next weekend in California, the 5th Annual Clinical Conference on Cannabis Therapeutics. So sit back and relax with your favorite strain. It's time for your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Representative Barney Frank to introduce bill for decriminalization of marijuana at the federal level. Representative Barney Frank will soon introduce legislation to decriminalize small amounts of marijuana, the Massachusetts Democrat said during an appearance on HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher.
I understand you have a new law that you're about to introduce that warmed the cockles of my heart.
I'm not even going to take advantage of that one.
Tell me about it, Barney.
I'm going to file a bill as soon as we go back to remove all federal penalties for the personal use or possession of small amounts of marijuana.
Define small.
Frank offered no details on his legislation, and it's not at all clear that he could ever get it to the House floor for a vote. A Frank aide was unaware of his plans other than his statement on HBO. Frank has introduced legislation in previous years to allow the use of medical marijuana, although the bills never made it out of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. Asked by Maher as to why he would push a pot decriminalization bill now, Frank said that the American public has already decided that personal use of marijuana is not a problem.
And I now think it's time for the politicians in this one to catch up to the public. The notion that you lock people up for smoking marijuana is pretty silly. And it's especially now, but I was going to call it, you got a name for it, the Make Room for the Serious Criminals bill.
Yeah, right.
taking up space.
Ruins people's lives to go to jail a lot worse than it does to smoke a little pot.
Well, this was a nice surprise to see when I was watching the Bill Maher Show on Friday. You know, Representative Frank's states' rights to medical marijuana bills have not passed in previous sessions, but he's been diligent in submitting them every year. On Maher's show, he expressed that he's been in Congress for 14 years, and he feels his seat is pretty safe, so now he can go out on a limb and call for full decriminalization. Perhaps if we end up with a president who admitted that I inhaled frequently, that was the point, then maybe we'll have a better political landscape that may finally support marijuana decriminalization. New study shows that U.S. hemp ban hurts the environment and the economy. From the Reason Foundation. With oil hitting $110 a barrel and gas prices creeping toward $4 a gallon, the federal government continues to prohibit U.S. farmers from growing hemp, which could be used to efficiently produce biofuels, including cellulosic ethanol. Hemp is a cost-effective, environmentally friendly substitute for polyester, cotton, fiberglass, and concrete, according to a new Reason Foundation study that examines hemp's potential uses and the ways other countries are benefiting from it. Industrial hemp production is banned in the U.S. as an archaic consequence of the war on drugs. The Reason Foundation study reveals that polyester fiber manufacturing requires 6 times the energy needed to grow hemp, and cotton is one of the most water- and pesticide-intensive crops in the world. Hemp's naturally higher resistance to weeds and pests means it requires dramatically fewer pesticides than cotton. Not only has the government banned hemp production in the U.S., it is also directly subsidizing other crops that the study shows to be environmentally inferior. Corn farmers received $51 billion in subsidies between 1995 and 2005. Wheat farmers were given $21 billion, cotton farmers fleeced taxpayers for $15 billion, and tobacco farmers were handed $530 million in taxpayer-funded subsidies. The full study, Illegally Green Environmental Costs of Hemp Prohibition, is available online at reason.org. And it always reminds me of one of my favorite sayings. Hemp is not illegal because of marijuana. Marijuana is illegal because of hemp. Certainly, if a mild intoxicant like marijuana were re-legalized, it might hurt the sales of beer and pharmaceuticals a little bit, but I think plenty of people will still use booze and pills. But if your choice is a $10 pair of hemp jeans versus a $50 pair of cotton denim jeans, and a 50-cent gallon of hemp ethanol versus a $5 gallon of gas, the restructuring of our economy will have to occur, and lots of very rich and powerful industries won't be so rich and powerful anymore. Calling BS on the Idea of Marijuana Addiction by Paul Armentano on the Alternet website. The U.S. government believes that America is going to pot, literally. Earlier this month, the U.S. National Institute on Drug Abuse, or NIDA, announced plans to spend $4 million to establish the nation's first ever Center on Cannabis Addiction, which will be based in La Jolla, California. The goal of the center, according to NIDA's press release, is to, quote, develop novel approaches to the prevention, diagnosis, and treatment of marijuana addiction, end quote. And what does the science say? Well, according to the nonpartisan National Academy of Sciences Institutes of Medicine, which published a multi-year million-dollar federal study assessing marijuana and health in 1999, quote, millions of Americans have tried marijuana, but most are not regular users and few marijuana users become dependent on it, end quote. The investigator added, quote, although some marijuana users develop dependence, they appear to be less likely to do so than users of other drugs, including alcohol and nicotine, and marijuana dependence appears to be less severe than dependence on other drugs, end quote. Most importantly, unlike the withdrawal symptoms associated with the cessation of most other intoxicants, pot's mild after effects do not appear to be either severe or long-lasting enough to perpetuate marijuana use in individuals who have decided to quit. This is why most marijuana smokers report voluntarily ceasing their cannabis use by age 30 with little physical or psychological difficulty. By comparison, many cigarette smokers who pick up the habit early in life continue to smoke for the rest of their lives despite making numerous efforts to quit. Further, pot lacks the profound abstinence symptoms associated with most legal intoxicants, including caffeine. Now, as always, it's worth clicking the links at our blog at stash.normal.org so you can read the full story. You only have to follow the money to understand why there is a push for creating, in the public's mind, a false stereotype about marijuana addiction. It's because that creates jobs for marijuana rehab and marijuana drug testing and prescriptions for drugs like lithium to relieve the addict's craving for the ganja. Check out the link by our deputy director, Paul Armentano. It's up at the Alternet, alternet.org, and you can also catch it at the Normal blog at blog.normal.org. The number one thing you can do to end cannabis prohibition for responsible adults is to get involved with the activists and organizations in your local area. Get your date book ready to jot down these important events on our Normal Daily Audio Stash's Reformers Calendar. This is your Reformers Calendar for the week of Monday, March 24th. Today, Monday, March 24th, 2008, in Pacific Grove, California. Today is your last day to register for meals and reduced price tickets to the 5th Annual National Clinical Conference on Cannabis Therapeutics. After today, tickets will cost $50 more, and you'll be on your own for meal purchases. The event takes place next weekend, April 4th and 5th, at the Asilomar Conference Center in Pacific Grove, California. For more information, see medicalcannabis.com. Tuesday, March 25th, in Hagerstown, Maryland, medical marijuana training from 6 to 9 p.m. at Hempen Hill Barbecue, 13208 Fountainhead Plaza, Hagerstown, Maryland. Sponsored by the Drug Policy Alliance, Americans for Safe Access, and the Marijuana Policy Project. For more info, contact N. Long at drugpolicy.org. Wednesday, March 26th, San Diego, California. A forum, Why Our Drug Laws Have Failed and What We Can Do About It, featuring Judge Jim Gray from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Thomas Jefferson School of Law, Courtyard Building 100, 2121 San Diego Avenue, San Diego, California. Presented by the Federalist Society and Students for Sensible Drug Policy. For more information, contact MargaretLee009 at yahoo.com or see www.judgejimgray.com. Thursday, March 27th, 2008, Colville, Washington, a film screening of Up the Ridge, a U.S. Prison Story, from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Colville Public Library, 195 South Oak Street, Colville, Washington. Sponsored by the November Coalition Foundation and Thousand Kites. For more information, contact 509-684-1550 or email tom@november.org. Due to the graphic nature of the film, it is not recommended for children. Admission is free. Donations are gladly accepted. And Sunday, March 30th, in Washington, D.C., it's Justice Sunday, a free reception featuring prison legal news experts at 2 p.m. at the Prison Art Gallery, 1600 K Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C., featuring Paul Wright and Alex Friedman of Prison Legal News. For more information, call 202-393-1511. And for links and information on all the events on the Reformers calendar, you can always check out our blog at stash.normal.org. And if you have an event for a future calendar, just email it to us at stash@normal.org.
Hi, this is Allison Holcomb, Director of the Marijuana Education Project at the ACLU of Washington, and you're listening to Radical Russ on the Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Well, big news here for the world of normal. This is a story that's just happened out in Massachusetts that's been building over the past few months, and it's finally come to a head with the trial of Keith Straup, the founder of Normal and Normal's legal counsel, along with Rick Cusick, who's the former editor and publisher of High Times magazine. So they're on trial in the state of Massachusetts for the crime of smoking a joint at the Boston Freedom Rally. So we called Keith here in his home in Washington, D.C. to talk to us. Keith, welcome back to the Daily Audio Stash.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here. Frankly, it's my pleasure to be anywhere other than locked up.
It's a lot of our pleasures to be anywhere but locked up, that's for sure.
Especially when I just got back from our latest visit to Boston on these marijuana charges, it does remind you that, you know, I think there were, I believe it was 8,600 people in the state of Massachusetts arrested last year on minor marijuana charges, you know, just marijuana smokers. And for a lot of those people, you know, they lost their jobs, some of them lost their freedom, their careers were interrupted. There's enormous damage being done by these laws. So in one way, I'm delighted to have the chance to challenge them. On the other hand, you know, it reminds me every time I come and go that one of these days they might not let me go. You know,
yeah.
I might have to spend a little time in Boston. But if so, I've got some reading material I need to catch up on.
Well, this is one of these time-in-a-lifetime type of cases here where we have the opportunity to challenge a law, challenge the constitutionality of the law, and also some other factors when we're talking about the trial system in America. And I thought it was very interesting how you and Mr. Cusick are going along and challenging the right of jury nullification and to be able to inform jurors of that right. Let's explain to people, because they probably don't understand or have heard of what that is.
Well, I think that's true. Some people are familiar with it because of the work of FEJA, a group that tries to better inform citizens of this common law right that we've always had in this country. Up until about the mid-1800s, and in some states as late as 1880s, when a defense lawyer was representing someone in at a criminal trial, number one, you argued he was innocent. But if, in fact, the jury found that, no, he committed the crime, the second point you were allowed to argue is, if, in fact, you believe that convicting this individual of this offense would create an injustice, then you have the legal right to acquit him. It's called generally called jury nullification. It's intended, or it was intended by the founders of our country, as a check on overreaching government. They recognized that there was always the potential that the institutions of government would become heavy-handed, and to protect the citizens against that kind of overreaching power, juries have the power to say no. And frankly, at the end of alcohol prohibition, there was a period where the government continued to prosecute people for violating alcohol prohibition, but juries no longer would convict them. Juries were sending a message to the legislature, we're fed up with this policy. So we intend to make the same kind of argument in this case. The challenge for Professor Charlie Neffen, who's the lawyer who's primarily focusing on the jury nullification part, the challenge is that since about the 1880s, the courts no longer allow defense lawyers to remind jurors of this power. Jurors have to almost magically come to the conclusion that they have this power. Now, it happens, and occasionally, and it doesn't have to be uniform. If only one juror holds out, you can't convict. So
right.
We're going to do our damnedest to keep Professor Neffen out of jail, because if he's not careful, they'll hold. If he actually came out and told them they have the power to do that, they would hold him in contempt, and he'd be thrown in jail, and they would declare a mistrial.
Well, that's just an amazing thing.
Be careful how we push it, but I can tell you we're going to push it.
Like I was saying, that's just an amazing thing to me. You know, not being a lawyer myself, just kind of having a knowledge of the Constitution and, you know, what I learned in school and taught myself. But, you know, I'm just amazed that we have these situations where lawyers aren't allowed to provide appropriate defenses for defendants. I mean,
I agree. What has happened, of course, is over time, it's developed into a kind of a stylized dance where each player knows his role and knows his part, and it kind of comes off like an opera or some other musical or something. They forget that what we're supposed to be doing is dispensing justice,
right,
for Christ's sake. And that may occasionally require somebody to speak out of turn or do something a little differently. But as I say, the judges have done pretty well in the last 100 years in keeping this secret from most jurors, but occasionally a jury finds out it has the power and they acquit, and we're going to do our damnedest. One thing we do know, Russ, there was a survey the Boston Herald did the day after our arrest, after Rick and I were arrested, in which they actually asked a question on their website of, do you think that on one day a year, it's usually in mid-September when they hold the Boston Freedom Rally, because they've held it now for 18 years on the Boston Common, that the police should simply suspend enforcing minor marijuana offenses for that one day on Boston Common. Now, I would have expected that the people supporting that would have been pretty low. It was 87% of the respondents said yes.
Yeah.
So what we do know is most people in Massachusetts do not think that a 64-year-old gray-haired lawyer like myself should be treated like a criminal simply for smoking a joint. And if given the opportunity, I don't think they will convict us, but we'll see.
Well, we will see, and it'll be an interesting challenge. I mean, we've seen so many ways in which the war on drugs has caused our justice system to, like you say, forget about the path of justice between this thing with jury nullification, with mandatory minimums, taking away the right of judges to, you know, actually adjudicate a fair sentence for someone. And then, of course, the way that they trample all over the states that have had medical marijuana. This needs to end, and I'm sure hoping that this trial can go in the, take us in that direction. So another question here is the fact that you stated quite plainly that you're not fighting the nature of the offense, that, you know, indeed you were guilty of being there at the Boston Common, correct?
Oh yeah. In fact, by the way, when we finally do get to the trial phase of this, both Rick and I intend to take the stand and say, of course we were smoking a joint. That's the only reason we were there. It's what used to be called a smoke-in. It's called the Boston Freedom Rally, but once a year, anywhere from 10,000 to 50,000 people gather on the Boston Common for one point. They gather there to protest marijuana prohibition. They want it legalized, and they want to stop treating smokers like criminals. So I have been to the last probably 12 of those. I speak at each event, and the only reason I was in Boston is to attend that event and to smoke a joint as part of that event. It is a political statement, and I think it absolutely should be covered as political speech.
Absolutely. We completely agree with that, of course. And now, what kind of sentence might you be facing here with an unfriendly judge or jury?
They could keep us in jail for up to 6 months. It's a minor misdemeanor. I think for that to happen, we would have to obviously angered the judge quite a lot. If the judge understands that we're honestly bringing a constitutional challenge because we think it's an important issue, and that the courts haven't reviewed the constitutionality of the marijuana laws in Massachusetts for 29 years. It was, the first big challenge was 69, the second one was 1978. So in the last 29 years, you can imagine there's enormous amounts of new information mm-hmm. available to support the idea that there's no rational basis to treat a marijuana smoker like a criminal. But the only way the courts are going to know that is to hold one of these hearings and examine it again. And that's what we're trying to get them to do. Frankly, to date, this past trip, they slammed the door in our face, told us no. They weren't going to give us a hearing. They weren't going to let us put on witnesses. But we're not done. You know, that's a minor setback, but we're filing a motion to reconsider. We've got 10 days to do that. We're filing a number of additional affidavits. We had a wonderful 30-page affidavit from Dr. Lester Grinspoon, and we're going to even add to that. So what we're trying to do is to make sure that we have the strongest possible record so that if they don't give us a hearing on the pretrial level, then at least we'll have a strong record on appeal. Obviously, at trial, we don't have any defense. We're going to take the stand and say, of course I smoked a joint, and it's nothing. There's nothing wrong with smoking.
Right. So they're not going to grant a hearing. It's basically they're putting their fingers in the ears and saying, la, 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 we don't want to hear this. We don't want to bring this case up.
They actually said, the one judge we were first before said, well, I don't have time, but I'm going to kick you over to another judge, and he'll have this hearing later today. And then we get to the other judge, and he says, oh, I'm too busy. I don't have time for this kind of a thing. Well, you know, look, I appreciate they are busy at the municipal court level. There's no doubt about it. They've got too many cases, too many defendants, too few judges, etc. On the other hand, that's not a legal defense.
Right.
When you raise a defense in a criminal matter, the answer isn't, I'm too busy to hear it. I mean, even though that may be a practical response. So I'm convinced that one way or the other, we will, in fact, get the courts in Massachusetts to take a fresh look at the constitutional issues involved. And if we don't, we're going to make the best possible case we can. And if we don't win this time, then maybe the next people to bring the challenge will be the ones to win it.
Now, what do you find different in Massachusetts Constitution that gives you a angle on this trial versus what we'd find in the federal Constitution?
Well, both federal and state have a right to privacy, and generally when you're talking about marijuana smoking, it's protected conduct, if at all, because it's covered under your right to privacy. In other words, you're not really arguing that I have a right to smoke a joint. What you're arguing is, generally, the government has no right to come into this part of my private life. They have no right to know what music I listen to, what books I read, whether I smoke marijuana or drink alcohol. It's none of their business. That's all protected in that penumbra of rights under the First Amendment. So the argument is pretty much the same whether you're making it in federal court or state court, but the difference is some states have a stronger constitutional protection in their state constitution than does the federal. For example, Hawaii and Alaska are noted because they have especially strong right to privacy provisions. Massachusetts has something, I believe it's called the Charter of Rights, that was part of their original creation of the state of Massachusetts. And they speak in terms of strictly limiting the power of the government to interfere with the blessings of mankind and the enjoyment of life. It really is quite extraordinary language.
Mm-hmm.
And should certainly be sufficient to protect the private use of marijuana by adults. So I think intellectually we've got a strong case to be made. I recognize that it's always uphill because we're trying to overturn precedent.
Right. And, you know, while it might be intellectually the easy case to make, socially and politically, sometimes there will be people trying to put roadblocks in our way from getting heard. Well,
without question. I mean, you know, there's a whole structure out there that depends on things continuing pretty much the way they've always been done. And so whenever you come up and propose a change, it feels threatening to people. Now, I will say that on this issue, we know we enjoy the hearts and minds of 3 out of 4 Americans. There's that CNN Time Magazine poll that's, I think, over 3 years old now, that had 76% of the public say a fine only for a marijuana smoker, no arrest or no jail. 3 out of 4 Americans accept the basic principle that there's nothing wrong with smoking pot and the government should stay out of it. But yet, you know, we're having trouble getting the government to even give us a hearing so we can bring that evidence in.
So we'll thank Keith Straub from Normal for joining us, the founder of Normal, for joining us to fill us in on the latest on his trial in Massachusetts. Keith, thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure as always, and I assure you the fight has only begun.
Excellent. Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take the time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. Well, welcome to Blue Monday, Stashers. If Monday isn't a good enough reason for the blues, then Prozac definitely fills the prescription. Ernie Southern is a juke joint one-man band slide guitarist. Ernie began playing music in the 60s on the street corners of New York. Just as his career was taking off and his band was on the verge of a recording contract, the Vietnam War landed Ernie a berth on the USS Enterprise. Now, 30 years later, Ernie's resume is a mile long with the blues giants he has played alongside, but as this track proves, a good blues man needs only his guitar to fill the stage. Prozac Blues showcases his writing style and Mr. Southern's warm vocals. I think the cure for the Prozac Blues is the color green, but who ever heard of a happy ending to a blues song? For more information on this artist, see the links at music.podshow.com. You can download the MP3 at our blog, stash.normal.org. This is Ernie Southern with Prozac Blues.
Well, something funny in my brain. Is it too left so hard to explain? Stop all your yakety yak, I'm waiting on my panic attack. When I heard about it from my choir, I got them Prozac and blue. Hey, 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 hey. Hey, 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 hey. Oh, oh. When I heard about it from my choir, I got them Prozac blues. $3 a piece, little green and white pill. How am I gonna pay all the rest of my bill? Stop all your yakety yak, I'm waiting on my panic attack. Well, I heard about it from my choir, I got them Prozac blues. Yeah. Well, I heard about it from my choir, I got them Prozac blues.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
So in our continuing look at the medical uses of cannabis, well, we like to turn to the people that are trying to help educate the doctors and nurses, the people who are working in healthcare, to be part of the advocacy for the medical use of cannabis. So today we turn to California, and I'm speaking with M.L. Mathry, who is putting together clinics for doctors and nurses to better understand the medical uses of cannabis. So M.L., thank you for joining us here on The Stash.
Thanks for having me.
Well, this will be, we're looking at April 4th and 5th, and you guys are putting on a clinic here and are working to get it accredited. So tell our listeners a little bit about what that means, this accreditation, and what the clinic will be covering, the theme, and what people can expect.
Okay, thanks. This is the fifth in a series of biennial conferences called the 5th National Clinical Conference on Cannabis Therapeutics, and basically that's what it is. It's not basic research. We really try to get a holistic picture of cannabis as medicine from bringing in some basic research, bringing in clinical trials, bringing in actual patients and physicians who care for those patients. The theme this year we have is cannabis re-entering mainstream medicine. It was chosen for a couple of reasons. The re-entering is to remind people that cannabis was a medicine. It was a very useful medicine for a wide variety of ailments before the prohibition began in the United States. And frankly, now more and more research that is occurring, it's starting to come out as pharmaceutical products in England developing Sativex, which is now available in Canada. Throughout the world, different products becoming available, all of them validating the fact that cannabis, not just the THC as found in the Marinol pill, which is the psychoactive, main psychoactive substance in cannabis, but that the whole plant cannabis, with all of its cannabinoids and other chemicals in that plant, have therapeutic value when put together. And so we, by being an accredited conference, this is actually a conference that the physicians and nurses can earn their continuing education units that are basically vital in keeping their license current.
Right. Now, these doctors and nurses that attend your clinics, have you found in general that they're receptive to the idea of medical uses of cannabis, or do you receive some opposition from some of the groups out there?
Well, I think what's made the news, back in 2003, the American Nurses Association put out a paper that, a resolution that, you know, called for the government to stop the prohibition and allow patients to use it and many other, you know, resolves that go according to getting this medicine available to patients. Just this year, the American College of Physicians finally came on board, and they're the second largest medical professional organization, so they came on board saying the same thing. You know, a lot of healthcare professionals recognize that it has medical value. Depending on where they practice, the state they practice in, the type of practice, because of the legal ramifications of it being a Schedule I drug, there is still much fear about openly talking about it. They're still much, you know, they're still greatly intimidated by the federal government. And frankly, I can tell you that one nurse who spoke at our conference in 2006 met some of that wrath when he returned to his work, and by the basis of him speaking at our conference was literally made to do a drug test.
Now, was that Nurse Ed Glick?
Nurse Ed Glick.
Yeah, I know Nurse Ed, and have met him many times. I'm up here in Portland, Oregon, so he's been at a number of our events as well. And, yeah, he spoke at great length about his selective persecution there. Now,
you know, and we've got a nursing shortage now.
Yeah.
And one of the things we try to do at this conference is really, well, it's basic. We know that it does have therapeutic value. So, you know, just as normal understands that the laws against marijuana are ridiculous. And so it's how do you get these laws changed? And from a healthcare professional perspective, you know, I just really push the ethics of it, that it is just unethical. The science is there, and it's really unethical for healthcare professionals to hide their heads in the sand. And when a nurse like Ed, who is a very compassionate nurse, you know, gets scapegoated for it, or, you know, takes the repercussions, and other healthcare professionals are quiet, you know, in the background and not standing up, it's just, you know, all it serves to do is put the fear in other healthcare professionals, and this is, it's not serving anyone any purpose there, because the patients really need healthcare professionals as their advocates.
Now who are the boards or the organizations that accredit these types of clinics?
Well, you have to go through something. Very often it could be a professional like a state nurses or physicians association society, or it could be, most often it's through a university. And so we're going through the University of California, San Francisco School of Medicine. And this is the second, they accredited our conference in 2006 when it was in Santa Barbara. And when we suggested the conference for this year, they were wholeheartedly for it. You know, they saw what we did. They think it's very important, and no trouble at all getting the coverage from them. Now, granted, the faculty from the University of California, San Francisco, who has been our link and on our planning committee, has been Donald Abrams, who is just a wonderful, you know, clinician, researcher who looks at you know, cannabis use with, whether it be HIV/AIDS patients, whether it be pain, you know, and he'll be presenting his research, which is, you know, right at the forefront.
Well, most excellent. So there'll be plenty for everyone to learn. Now, does someone have to be a doctor or a nurse to attend this clinic, or is it just open to the public?
Thanks so much for asking that question. No, by all means, this is open to anyone. And again, that's what I mean by it's a little different. We've designed this, and frankly, it's probably because it is a nursing perspective, to give the whole picture and to make it in very understandable terms. We have a lot of patients who come. They urge their healthcare provider to come, and, you know, we would love to see that. But the patients come because they want to be validated. They know it helps them. And, of course, you've heard it as well as we've heard the government saying that the patients are just pawns of legalizers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're being taken advantage of. And it's like, you know, patients aren't fools. If it helps them start eating, feel better, less pain, spasticity gone, eyesight stays. There are so many things that cannabis does. You know, they can tell.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I always like to say I've been working for Normal since 2005. I have yet to have a patient come up to me and say, "Stop taking advantage of me." That's never happened. Everybody seems to be very happy to be using the cannabis medicine and getting great relief from their symptoms.
The other thing that's different, because we do have this variety of speakers, I mean, it's all geared at the health of it, but it's not just the researchers, you know, the lab researchers, but then it's the clinical researchers, the ones that are doing their research with people as opposed to the animals, and then it's the patients and the care providers. And I think what's really been exciting about this conference is patients, whether they're in the audience or speaking, come and feel validated. The researchers have really appreciated the conference, the ones who are speaking at the conference, because it gives them the full circle, and it kind of, you know, helps them understand how important their research is and that people are willing to listen to it. As you know, there's a lot of research coming out these days. You know, each year you can find hundreds of studies that are coming out, you know, showing some kind of benefit, whether it be in our understanding the system in our own bodies about the cannabinoids that we all humans have, or whether it be how cannabis interacts with the body. And yet that's not what's making the headlines. You know, so it's going to be an exciting conference in terms of giving people a really good overview of what is known now. And I think this one's going to have quite a thrust on trying to push the professionals to be a little bit more active about, you know, speaking up for the truth, speaking up for science.
Now, let's make sure we fill them in on the details so that they can put this down on their calendar. This is your medical, your accredited clinics. The theme is cannabis reentering mainstream medicine. Let's let everyone know the location and the time and how they can get tickets or get involved in the presentation.
Okay. I'd urge anyone, if they want to attend, to think about registering as soon as possible. There will be some limited seating. It is going to be held at Asilomar Conference Grounds in Pacific Grove, California, April 4th and 5th, two full days of very interesting material. I promise anyone who attends, anyone could find out more about it by going online to our webpage, which is www.medicalcannabis.com. First thing on the page is information about the conference. You can find out who the speakers are, what the agenda is, and register online.
Well, excellent. That gives us everything we need to know. People can get involved, get this marked down on your calendar. This will definitely be worth the time to learn all about the medical uses of cannabis and what we can do to spread the word about cannabis and its medical uses across the 50 states and around the world. I want to thank ML Mathry, who's calling us from Virginia today and setting up that conference in Pacific Grove, California. ML, thanks for joining us on The Stash.
Thank you, Russ.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org, and you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you with today's cannabis quote from
Professor Olaf Drummer, a forensic scientist with the Royal College of Surgeons in Melbourne, Australia. Quote, "Compared to alcohol, which makes people take more risks on the road, marijuana made drivers slow down and drive more carefully. Cannabis is good for driving skills, as people tend to overcompensate for a perceived impairment." End quote. Well, that's something to think about, although we here at Normal would never recommend that you drive under the influence of marijuana.